never stop to wonder when watching my TV why we who do the work are so seldom seen.
Now I'm wondering why we're blacked out or portrayed as troublemakers or always in the background when on screen. Work in TV.
Hello, I'm Judy Darcy. Welcome to the Labor Environmental Alliance Society special series produced with Working TV. The labor movement is known for protecting health and safety, and that's important when you consider that the Canadian Cancer Society predicts that cancer rates will rise by 60% in the next 20 years. A key cancer prevention strategy is reducing our exposure to toxic chemicals. The Labor Environmental Alliance Society has created some tools to make it easy to eliminate toxins from your workplace, your home, and our environment. Information about the LEAS Toxins and Cleaners and Cancer Smart Consumer Guides and Toxins in the Workplace program can all be found at www.lease.ca. The general public isn't well protected by Canadian labeling laws. Workers have more right to know what's in the products they are exposed to. But these rights were hard won and are being eroded by current and proposed changes to WCB regulations and guidelines. Join LEAS directors Larry Stoffman and Sean Griffin in a discussion about the implications of these changes to WCB.
Many people may not know it, but here in British Columbia, we have some of the best workers' compensation board regulations probably across the continent. Now, they haven't come about simply because governments enacted them. They've come about because a lot of working people and trade unions and various other people have negotiated and worked with agencies to bring about those changes and to bring about the regulation that currently stands. But unfortunately, over the past number of months, there's been a number of efforts on the part of the current Liberal government to try and change those regulations and to reduce the effectiveness that they are there for workers. We have, for example, here in the regulation, a leading exposure table, which has looked at a number of toxins that workers may be exposed to in the workplace and has established exposure limits for them, and has even designated some of them as carcinogens or reproductive toxicants that require substitution in the event that workers encounter them in the workplace. Those two are part of the proposed changes that government wanted to make to the regulation. I have with me today Larry Stoffman, who's a leading expert in occupational health and safety and is certainly one of those who has been a big part of the process of negotiating this regulation in its formation during the early 1990s. Welcome, Larry. And maybe I could just ask you to start off with how we came about to have these regulations. Where did they come from? What was the process that established them?
It was a long process. It started in 1992, roughly. It took us 6 years between the beginning of that process and the time the regulation was actually enacted into law. It was a tripartite process that involved representatives of labor, representatives of industry, and of the Workers' Compensation Board. And it covered a process that covered every area of health and safety of concern. The intent was to modernize some very outdated regulations that hadn't been looked at since 1979, to bring into regulation areas that hadn't been regulated before that needed to be, such as ergonomic hazards as an example, violence in the workplace is another, to update chemical hazard exposure limits that hadn't been updated for decades, to address indoor air quality issues that had never been addressed in the workplace. Those are some examples. We managed to do that. We managed to develop consensus, unbelievable as it might seem today, between or amongst the labor community, industry, and the Workers' Compensation Board, and those consensus recommendations went to the public through public hearings, and then most of those regulations were enacted. So we looked at the best science, the best evidence in all of those fields, and our intent was to improve worker health and safety in this province and hopefully have prevention as a leading edge in Canada, to make prevention system in the workplace better than anywhere else in Canada, or certainly as best as one could find anywhere in the developed world. And for the most part, we were successful up until 1998. And between then and now, there's been some significant changes.
So what's happened? What kinds of changes are we talking about here?
Well, it's hard to know where to start because mm-hmm. they've been so intense and all-consuming, really. When the latest provincial government, when the Liberal government took office, they promised industry that they would get rid of a third of all government regulation, sort of following that kind of Ronald Reagan philosophy that any kind of government, or Margaret Thatcherism, mm-hmm. any kind of government regulation is bad for business. They just indiscriminately said they were going to get rid of a third of any regulation, even if it meant health and safety regulations. So ignoring the fact that almost every regulation in the book was only put there because some worker had suffered due to exposure to a workplace health or safety hazard, and that's why the regulation was there, they decided to embark on cutting as much as they could. So the Workers' Compensation Board, although it's on paper an independent agency, really it's top management and its administration is following the orders of the Ministry of Labor, to whom it reports. And they decided that they would undertake a big regulation counting exercise. Where, I mean, it's for the average person to understand this is difficult. Mm-hmm. Imagine a regulatory agency that's mm-hmm. charged with a mandate to ensure that people don't get killed on the job, that people don't get chronic disease on the job, get cancer from the job, or get any other kind of acute or chronic injury that could permanently disable them. Imagine an organization with a mandate that is as important as that, diverting its inspectorate and its inspection hours from going into the workplace to make sure things are safe and complied with to counting regulations in a paper exercise.
So that's what they were actually
doing. That's what they actually did, yeah. They spent hours, thousands of hours counting regulations, and decided every time there was a word in the regulation book that said an employer shall do this, that would count as a regulation. So you may have one regulation that has two or three shalls in it, that becomes two or three regulations, right? So they decided, you know, we have to get rid of one third of these. What's an easy way to do it? Well, one way is we had exposure limits for hundreds and hundreds of very toxic materials, very hazardous chemicals in the workplace, and they decided to get rid of the entire table of exposure limits. And simply reference a private American-based organization called the American Conference of Governmental Industrial Hygienists. Mm-hmm. They have nothing to do with government, but that's what they call themselves. They're industry industrial hygienists, some academics. And they recommend exposure limits for substances annually, but not for all substances, just the ones they have the resources to look at, which are just very few on a list of hundreds. And they simply said, we'll adopt that holus bolus for BC and get rid of all of the made in BC regulations that we spent 6 years dealing with, working on.
So presumably the standards were lowered in this process as well.
They would have been had we not intervened.
Right.
Last March, there were public hearings on that. Labor and most professionals, I think all the professionals that came before the public hearings unanimously opposed this recommendation. Mm. Unfortunately, industry supported it because they see it's a form of deregulating the workplace.
Right.
And a lot of it was a numbers game because they said, well, we can simply reference this one organization and call that one regulation and thereby get rid of 800 others because we don't have exposure limits for the 800 others in a table, but we reference one organization that publishes its own list of exposure limits. So they thought it was a kind of sneaky way to get rid of regulations but still not get rid of exposure limits.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of that was very poorly analyzed. It meant that for scores of really toxic materials, exposure limits might be doubled, quadrupled, even raised higher than that. For many well-known cancer-causing products or ingredients, they would suddenly not be classified as cancer-causing simply because this American organization hadn't gotten around to reclassifying them, whereas the system we had in place looked at all of the international standards based on the best practices in the developed countries
mm-hmm.
to show that you could have more stringent rules that are also economically feasible because they've been adopted in these countries and protect people's health. All of that was thrown away. It is outrageous.
Can you give me an example of some substance that would have been regulated here but are regulated elsewhere in the world but not here as a result of these changes? Had they taken place?
Well, there's all sorts of them. I mean, just now, before I do that, mm-hmm. let's get right to what's going on today. So we were successful last March in maintaining the international classification of cancer-causing chemicals by an organization called the IARC. And I think it was because of our interventions that they said, all right, we'll maintain that classification. But they still got rid of all the other exposure limits and adopted this American-based private organization's recommendation as a standard. Mm-hmm. As a consequence, many reproductive toxicants lost their classification. What that means is we had used an international system of classifying known reproductive hazards, teratogens, mutagens, compounds, chemical compounds that can significantly affect workers' families or ability to reproduce or the effects on offspring. Mm-hmm. The ACGIH, this American organization, is very much out of date and very remiss in its classification of these reproductive hazards, for example. So very few things it classifies as reproductive hazards that are done so internationally. So we're still, in their current proposal, going to lose all those classifications. And we just spoke the other day to the board in public hearings urging them not to do this. So we'll see if they listen. There are many examples of that. Carbon disulfide, I mean, there are different solvents that we mm-hmm. know are reproductive hazards that are no longer designated as such. Aerochlor, 1242, PCB, very well-known substance. People are very concerned about any exposure to PCBs, for example, isn't classified as a reproductive hazard by this system, whereas in our old system, of course, it was.
As I understand it, too, that one of the requirements was under the old regulation was that if there was a designated reproductive toxicant, workers could ask for substitution of mm-hmm. that particular ingredient if there was a substitute available. Are you telling me that that will no longer be a possibility if this new process...
Well, that's right. If you lose the classification, then the other regulation that ties into that is lost, mm-hmm. which is that if it is classified as a reproductive toxicant or a sensitizing agent, then you can insist that it be substituted with something less hazardous.
Right.
You wouldn't have the same rights to insist mm-hmm. that. So it could be significant, extremely dangerous. There are a list of chemicals that fall into that category. There are others that it's almost inexplicable. Two to come to mind where even this American group has lower recommended exposure limits. But for some reason, the BCWCB is recommending that we maintain a higher exposure limit for those chemicals.
Really?
And the two are very well known, formaldehyde and styrene. Formaldehyde is used widely in producing plywood. It's used widely in the pulp and paper industry. The forest industry is a huge consumer of formaldehyde, for example. It's a designated cancer-causing substance. It's a sensitizing agent. It's extremely toxic.
Right.
The ACGIH has an exposure limit that is three times lower than what the WCB is proposing we adopt here. So on the one hand, they're saying, well, let's get rid of our own exposure limits
right.
and adopt theirs, but if they have a lower one, we won't adopt it. I mean, who's calling the tune here? Is it an agency that's concerned about people's health and safety, workers' health and safety, or is it the industry that would rather have lower costs by not having to comply with a healthier limit? It seems to me the industry is calling the shots here.
Right.
And in the name of deregulation and getting rid of a third of all government regulation, we have people that are going to be exposed to carcinogens or reproductive toxins or potent sensitizing agents like formaldehyde at higher levels.